This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Headline news is that Johannesburg has a new mayor in the name of Sello Dada Morero. But how it came about was really what was intriguing, because these were real kind of political maneuvers at play. And as we watched the coalition's kind of breakup, makeup, regroup, it just kind of echoed what was going on in other parts of the country as well, where no party has an outright majority. And so coalitions have come into the fore at the municipal level. And it's really been the hallmark of the 2021 municipal elections. And experts have said what's happening at this local government level could play itself out at a national level in the 2024 election, as the ruling ANC starts to really lose a lot of trust in the eyes of many ordinary citizens. It might not happen that way ultimately, but there is a sense that this is the beginning of a new political trend in South Africa. And while some are anxious, some are saying no, actually, it's a sign of the democracy maturing in South Africa. I don't know what the views are, but we've got two experts who are going to talk to us now about coalition politics as they play themselves out in other parts of the world, lessons to learn, and then as they begin to sort of manifest in the South African context, something quite new in South Africa. And what are international, you know, it's not quite the right term, international best practice, but really, what are some of the lessons to learn from countries where coalitions do work, and just fundamentals that need to be sort of introduced in the South African context, if indeed, and this is a big if indeed, coalition politics becomes the future of South Africa, certainly in the near to medium term. We're joined by Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, who's a political analyst at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. Dr. Vilakazi, good morning.
Good morning, Lerato, and good morning to listeners at home.
And we're also joined in studio by Wayne Sussman, who is an elections analyst as well. Thank you very much, Wayne, for coming through.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's start off with you, Wayne, because here we are in the city of Johannesburg, where we've seen a nine-party coalition show many fissures, chasms and cracks, just because I want to use fancy words. But what are the critical challenges that this coalition has faced in the city of Johannesburg?
Great. So if one remembers in 2011 and 2016, the ANC had an outright majority in the city of Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And after 2016, the ANC fell below 50%, and Herman Mashaba, then with the DA, formed a coalition. So this is the second time in Johannesburg we've had a coalition. And obviously after 2021, we saw both the ANC and the DA lose ground, and the DA with Dr. Impopolatsi and Action SA and a lot of other parties were able to form a coalition. The challenge is, in a massive multi-party coalition, is how to keep everyone on track, how to make sure that coalition partners, so first of all, the coalition's working and it doing services which are improving the lives of residents and tax and ratepayers in the city. And second of all, allowing the coalition partners to make sure that they are able to show that parts of their manifesto are being honoured and achieved by successes of the coalition. And this can be some of the challenges. Then we have something which starts with an E and ends with go. Egos can often be at play in coalitions. And I think that was definitely at play with regards to, first of all, the breakdown in the coalition in Nelson Mandela Bay.
Yeah.
And now recently in the city of Johannesburg.
I want to bring you in, Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, and I am cognizant of the fact that you're based in KwaZulu-Natal, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that you're a political analyst, so you can speak to anything national and global. So, as Wayne is alluding to, the Joburg coalition is tricky, but Nelson Mandela Bay, oh my gosh, books can be written about what's been going on there. So, what's your understanding of what's been happening in that part of the country?
I mean, I share similar sentiments to say hello to Wayne as well. It's been a contestation of personalities. It's also about, trust between political parties who become, members of the coalition, not really trusting each other to be able to deliver on each other's manifestos, So it's been that kind of a dynamic, which is not unique. I mean, as Wayne has indicated, we've seen it in Tshwane, we've seen it in Johannesburg now with Tumpo Paladze. So I would like to take it perhaps just beyond the local municipalities, but just really on the trends, globally. I think what we're seeing happening, Lerato, in the country is a sign of a democracy that is maturing. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something that is unusual. What we've seen in Nelson Mandela Bay, now that we've got the DA back sort of in the coalition leading, mm-hmm. what we're seeing with the collapse of Johannesburg, what we're seeing, what happened in Tshwane, is something that has happened in India, something that has happened in countries like Finland, Indonesia, in various parts of the globe where democracies have arrived at a place of a certain level of maturity. And I think that's what we're going through as a country. And it's getting us into a place where we need to look beyond egos, but also not ignore egos, like Wayne is saying. Look beyond personalities in our politics and look at actually the kinds of frameworks that will deliver to the people. And I can speak to that later on.
Okay, we will look at the international cases in a second. The Nelson Mandela Bay situation has now sort of been resolved. The DA is back, a new deal has been struck, but it's been described as a broken metro. It's not even the terminology that's been used for Gauteng. Wayne, why do you think that is?
Well, Nelson Mandela Bay has a major water crisis. There's been a drought. We've also seen that there's been a lot of service delivery and corruption over the last 5 to 10 years, actually longer than that period. And what one sees today, it's even less stable than what you see now in Johannesburg. And that I think it is 10 parties in a coalition. Because the DA with its coalition partners have 62 out of the 120 seats. Now, within that coalition of 62 seats, the DA has 48 of the 62 seats. So that by far the overwhelming amount of seats in that coalition, the next largest party has 3 seats. So I just want to repeat those numbers. 48 seats for the DA, 3 seats for a party called the Northern Alliance, a local party. And what ends up happening is that in order for the DA to try form a stable coalition, they have to give up so many mayoral committee positions or other executive positions to parties with 1 seat. Mm. And this is the this is going to be one of the challenges, because on the one hand, you're going to have DA people who are going to say, look, we're by far the biggest party. We should have the lion's share of positions. And then you're going to have the smaller parties say, well, you can't do anything without us, and you better reward us with right positions so we can show our supporters there we can deliver. And it's going to be, if it's been messy in the first 10 months, I can assure you it's going to be messy for the next 10 months as well.
And Dr. Figile Vilagazi, you mentioned Tshwane, and they've embarked on a coalition since around 2016, and there were many ructions and things really didn't work out really well. But it seems what's happening in Tshwane, and it seems, I'm not saying that's what it is it's not so much the coalition per se, but it's a lot of the administrative issues around Tshwane that's a real challenge. Like, there's no money in Tshwane, and when there's no money, it's hard to push any agenda forward. What about operational day-to-day administrative things having a bearing on the coalition?
Look, I mean, if you cannot deliver services to the people, if your administrative structures are cracked, right, it becomes the big problem. Because one of the things is that, like you see in Tshwane, where issues of money are big issues of who's really going to be held accountable when citizens don't receive the services that they require in a coalition, become a big deal. So the administrative issues within coalitions are also very key, because as you are seeing these contestations happening and these cracks are happening, citizens need someone that they can hold accountable to say, either the EFF or is going to be the ANC or whatever, you know, member of the coalition. But the problem with the administrative system at this point of coalitions is that it does not really guarantee that level of accountability for citizens, mainly because the country doesn't really have a constitutional framework that gives direction to coalitions just for administrative purposes. We do not have also, you know, in terms of the HR policy for governments in the country that speaks to what happens when it is not just, it's more than one party that governs a particular municipality. And those are the dynamics that we saw in Tshwane, right? Mm-hmm. Who really is responsible for bringing in money? And when that money is there, how do we then even manage mm-hmm. that money in the context of a coalition? So those are the main challenges mm-hmm. that I think we are going to continue to see.
So from what you've said and from what she said, I hear three things. Size is an issue. Size of representation, egos and personalities, and competence for administration.
Yeah. So if I can just add something on, there's also a slight difference with Tshwane compared to the other coalitions, and also in a way eThekwini in Durban to some of the other coalitions. The coalitions which were formed in Ekurhuleni and Johannesburg after this election, and the coalition formed which replaced Herman Mashaba and the DA in Johannesburg, and the coalition which has now just been formed in Johannesburg. These are coalitions which are either anti-DA per se or anti-ANC. So I'd call these coalitions of convenience. Whereas in Tshwane, there's actually a coalition which has been formed where there are parties with similar ideological standpoints. And that might lead to in theory, a more stable coalition, because the DA, Action SA, Freedom Front, African Christian Democratic Party, parties of such ilk, have more in common than either the coalition which is formed on the premise of getting rid of the ANC or the DA, where they don't mm-hmm. often have much in common. So that's another distinction to make.
So let's do what it is that Dr. Vilakazi wanted us to do, which is let's look at where coalitions work across the world. Canada, Belgium, Finland, Norway, Germany, that's the European case. New Zealand, Japan, that's in the Pacific. India, here in Africa, Mauritius, Algeria. And even strangely, despite the tensions for almost 10 years, the Jubilee Coalition worked in Kenya. And Kenya's economy has actually been on a steady recovery path in this last decade, where it's been a coalition for 10 years in Kenya, Gabon as well. So they're not the best of examples, but they do show us that there can be growth, there can be economic management, there can even be revival and recovery for years on end as government is held together by these very different ideological forces. Dr. Vilakazi, what do you say to that?
I would say that certainly, you know, there are places where we can look from, you know, South Africa to say this is doable, this is possible. One of those, I would just point out Finland, and I think we need to also look at the geopolitics of it, because there are a number of variables that are key when we look at whether something is succeeding or not. And I would look at the variable of population, just in terms of demographics, you know, who are the majority, who speaks, is it business, is it the question of race, is it also the economic stability of a nation? So I want to point that out as I make Finland as an example and others, that what we've seen in Finland is that since independence, Finland has never really been a one-party state. So from the onset, Finland entered into coalition governance, which have seemed to work, and up to today, you are seeing a kind of coalition in Finland that is really aligned ideologically speaking. At least there have been, from time to time. Of course, there were instances where they did not see eye to eye, but one example is the foreign policy on feminist governance, for example, that they have now, which is a negotiated settlement between members of the coalition government in Finland to say, we are going to push this particular foreign policy towards the establishment of feminist governance globally. And that is part of their foreign policy agenda. And they were able to come together regardless of their differences. And I think what Wayne has pointed out in Tshwane is then an example, you know, which is something similar to what Finland has been doing. If parties can have clarity on their ideological policy standpoints, comparability of that is something that can hold parties together. Mm. So that is one example. And I think if we then go to India, India, which is more closer to us in a sense that the demographics in India are sort of, you know, representative or similar almost to what South Africa has, and Malaysia as well, in a sense that South Africa is a population that is diverse in terms of race, in terms of ethnicity, but also just in terms of location and rurality and urbanization and so on. Mm-hmm. You need to look at those variables when you talk about whether coalitions will work or not work. Now, we are in a system of a political system that is sort of like whoever jumps first to the post gets to win, which is the majority, right? Numbers then matter there. Numbers matter, which is a theoretical standpoint that speaks to something that you call utility maximization. Mm-hmm. How much then can coalition governments or members of the coalition work with numbers? So like you're saying, Nelson Mandela Bay Wayne puts it so well, the problem is that the DA has got a lot of numbers. And no one is, going to want to give up the question of saying we've got more than 50% and you've got only one seat. Right. So how do we negotiate numbers at the interest of service delivery? So in that particular instance, what then coalitions have got to do, they have to make sure that when they put a public administration policies centering issues of human resources, technical issues around service provision, that they make sure that all the numbers are represented and they are made public so that the citizens can be able to know who to hold accountable should there be failure or not.
Let's get Wayne's view on what makes a successful coalition, because Dr. Fiela Vilakazi has used the example of Finland and said something that I wasn't aware of, that even the coalition parties, as different as they are, they agree on a foreign policy that says you must support countries that want to promote women in leadership, feminist governments. So they are all aligned on a foreign policy. They might not agree on a green agenda. They might not agree on refuse collection, but they agree on some core values. So in your view, what are those ingredients that make for a successful coalition government when people are very different seated at one table, but they can agree on some fundamentals?
So first of all, I don't want Dr. Vilakazi to question us in Gauteng's manners. She greeted me earlier, so greetings to you, Dr. Vilakazi. Look, the one which comes to mind in Johannesburg was Herman Mashaba's campaign of when he was mayor of cleaning the city. I think it was the RSEBETSA. I forget the name of the program. But this was a successful, in a way, to be honest, a low-hanging fruit. So you didn't have to throw a lot of resources at it, but he got members of the public, councillors, etc., to gather on a Saturday and clean up a particular area. So this is it's a small example, but I think everyone could agree that it's better to have a cleaner, greener city. So those are examples. I think something which Dr. Palazzi tried to do with MMC David Tembe, who's, by the way, from Action SA, was to make a safer inner city. And I think this is something where parties, no matter where they live, no matter who their constituencies are, they can work together with. And that's what Mayor Dada Morero is going to have to do with regards to, I would say that it's going to be very important for him to get his coalition partners in Johannesburg around specific campaigns where they can all agree that we've got to do this together to show a discernible difference between us and the previous administration. And I'd say the same to Mayor Odendaal in Nelson Mandela Bay. That's something he's going to do very, very quickly. And again, I can think we've just seen a coalition in Israel, which was just formed on a single premise, and that was getting rid of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, where you had parties in the Israeli context on the left and on the right. You had an Arab party for the first time ever join the government. And that coalition fell apart very quickly because, similar to what we might see again in Johannesburg and again in Nelson Mandela Bay, if there is one person or a single seat party which can cross the floor to the other camp or the other coalition, that coalition will not work. So that's why what Dr. Vilakazi said earlier about numbers is absolutely critical. Right. If you're going to have a slender majority, there is the potential for that government to collapse very, very simply. And these are some of the challenges of the coalition.
Okay, I don't want to go into the numbers now because we're so close to the news. And I think it's a fundamental one. So we'll save that one for a short while. But what I am hearing is that when coalition partners, irrespective of ideology, can agree that there are some issues of national or local mutual interest. They must rally behind that. So in a city like Johannesburg, it would be cleanliness. In a city like Johannesburg, it would be managing crime and security. And perhaps now with the Eskom problem, it's let's make sure everybody at least is on the grid. And that is not ideological. That is just something that affects every citizen and needs to affect every citizen positively.
Correct, yeah. Yes.
Totally.
Okay, and so what do you think, Dr. Vilakazi, would be for a city like Johannesburg, those rallying points?
I mean, you know, recently you would have seen how Johannesburg, the tavern shootings, you know, the issues of electricity, citizens protesting. Those are the two key issues if there's nothing else, right? And I would put probably an employment as third. To say parties in a coalition have got to rally at least you know, around those two issues or three issues to say, no matter how different our manifestos may be, mm-hmm. no matter how ideologically disaligned we are, there's something that brings us together here. We are government. We've got a responsibility to deliver to citizens. So let us prioritize, bring in our ideas around the policy question on how to reduce crime in Johannesburg and how to create jobs for citizens of Johannesburg, but also how to make sure that the issues of levies and electricity and water are being done properly for citizens, regardless of our differences. And I can tell you, Lerato, it will work.
So policy issues matter, just better administration. You've constantly referenced, Wayne, the former mayor, Herman Mashaba, and when he came in that first instance, it was that issue of just get the books to balance, get people to pay for their rates and taxes, and just root out the bad eggs. Pretty simple, but when he started to get it right, they said get out.
Again, and I realize we're going to be quickly at news, it's a very delicate task, and I'm sure Dr. Vilakazi can speak to this. On the one hand, you have to manage your coalition partners, but you also have to manage the expectations of your own party, which is the biggest party in that coalition. And therefore, I've spent the whole weekend trying to analyze who the winners, who the losers, who's right, who's wrong with what's happening in Johannesburg and Nelson Mandela Bay. But this is tough stuff, because you can keep your coalition partners happy, but if you alienate people in your own party, then you're going to be left without a caucus. So these are some of the many multifaceted challenges with governing, with doing a coalition in South Africa.
Okay, let's mull over that. And then we're coming back with the issue around size and who's who and how much power is wielded within the coalition. We're in conversation with Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, who's a political analyst at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, joined by Wayne Suzman, who's an elections analyst, as we talk about coalition governments and realignment politics in South Africa. It's happening at municipal levels, some of the big metros, Nelson Mandela Bay, Tshwane, Johannesburg, City of Johannesburg, Ekurhuleni, we've heard about in eThekwini as well. But is this a foreboding? Is this good news for 2024, or this is what we have to get right before 2024? We'll continue after the news.
Power Talk, the view of the nation.
You're listening to Power Talk. I'm Lerato Mbele, and I think Chinua Achebe, Nobel laureate for literature, Nigerian writer, once wrote a book titled Things Fall Apart. And at the coalition government level, we have seen things fall apart and then get put back together again like a Humpty Dumpty, and everything is just kind of on shaky ground. But we're told that don't despair. This is good for a young democracy, which is what South Africa is. And coalitions are testing the mettle of the democracy, the political maturity of a people. But what about the people? What about service delivery at ground level? And those are some of the things that we're talking about in our conversation with Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, who's a political analyst at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, joined by Wayne Sussman, who's an elections analyst as well. So we asked in our conversation earlier on, what are the ingredients for a successful coalition? Many things were said. Compromise, managing egos, you know, getting the right kind of administrative codes, parameters, possibly even, you know, making sure that there's a proper legal status for the coalition. But you mentioned an interesting one, Wayne, size. Does size really matter here? And you used the example of Nelson Mandela Bay, where the DA has 48 out of 62 seats. So they may not have gotten an outright majority in an election, but they are that majority in that municipality. And why would there be a need to consult when you've got the numbers?
Because if you don't consult and keep So I think there are five parties with one seat in their a single seat in that coalition. Your government might fall, and therefore you have to consult all the time. You have to make sure that those parties with one or two seats are showing that they are bringing results to the particular residents who voted for them in the 2021 election. And that's going to be very, very complicated. And it also leaves you vulnerable. That's why they brought in an additional party, because 62 gives you a more stable majority than 61. But by giving another mayoral committee position up meant that there was less, again, as I alluded to earlier, for the DA to dish out to its own to councillors in its own party. So I would say that's a very unstable coalition. And one can look at a place like Ekurhuleni, Mzwandile Masina, he was the former mayor there. If the ANC was able to work with the EFF in Ekurhuleni in the East Rand of Gauteng, they would form a stable majority. They would a coalition. They would have the numbers to form a stable government. They wouldn't be beholden to some of the smaller parties. But can the ANC find the EFF? Can the EFF find the ANC? These are some of the challenges. If you look at the current Ekurhuleni government, that government came to being because Julius Malema showed up there when they elected the mayor, and he instructed the EFF councillors to vote for Tanya Campbell from the Democratic Alliance. And then you saw parties like the Patriotic Alliance join that coalition. With what we've seen with the PA and the EFF over the last few days in the city of Johannesburg, will we not see the same happening at Ekurhuleni?
We'll discuss that in a second. Dr. Vilakazi, I want to bring you into this conversation on size and managing the various stakeholders based on how many votes they have. So one of the surprises in Johannesburg last week was the election of a new speaker of council who's from COPE, who have less than a handful of seats. But here they now have this very, very prominent, important role in the council, which kind of sets the tone for the council. It's good. It gives preeminence to smaller parties. But others would say, no, it's not good, because if they wanted that preeminence, they should get those numbers at the voting station.
You see, that is where it gets complicated, Lerato, because also the voters are actually the main people that speak here. Voters may be very, very unhappy to say, we have voted a majority in the coalition and the majority doesn't have an influential position, you know. And of course, even within the council itself, it may cause disgruntlement, you know. People are saying, and JJ was talking about this as well, you can't have one seat in a metro and then you hold such a strategic position, which is that of a speaker or that of a mayor. At the same time, it may be that that particular candidate has got the kind of expertise that is required to be able to perform that task, which is why in a coalition, it's very important to know each other's strengths, to know each other's capabilities, particularly at the interest of the citizen here. For me, I think there are four things that should not be compromised. The executive role that can be played within the coalition, which party brings in the strength there, the legislative component, which is very, very important because you need this coalition to run the legislature successfully, but also policy priorities, which is something that we've already spoken to, right? But at the center of that service delivery. So for me, it's really about saying it shouldn't be about the fact that a person has got just one number against those who've got 10 or 15, but it is about saying bringing the power of the coalition is that of working collectively and working together at the interest of the citizen, which is where legislation comes in here, Lerato. I really think that we need to have some kind of a constitutional provision, but that may not be possible because it means then amending the constitution. But we need a legislative framework that will govern those kinds of things to say when a coalition is structured in these ways and the numbers are lesser than the other, because we are under, you know, that democratic representative politics that, of course, speak in terms of numbers, right? It may be that we need to then legislate to say, how do we make sure that everybody gets to contribute towards service delivery, regardless of the numbers? For me, should not be an issue, because those are just really semantics. Service delivery must be the meat of the coalition.
You talk about sort of legislating. These coalitions, do they exist in a kind of a legal status, Dr. Vilakazi? Is there a framework legally binding by which they need to operate, or is this just plain politics?
Well, as far as I know, I mean, you know, I think Wayne may speak as well here because he sits there mostly. My sense of my understanding of the law in South Africa at the moment is that we do not have any provision within the constitution that governs the coalition politics. We do not have a legislative framework as well, which is a law that governs that guides coalitions should they happen in the country. Mm-hmm. As much as we've had coalitions over time, these coalitions have really been governed by mere agreements that are signed mm-hmm. by political parties who come in and out of a coalition. Those agreements are not even binding in the court of law in South Africa wow. at this point. So you can't really take a party that is not delivering this mandate into a court of law to say you have signed and you are not yeah. delivering. And they can break those agreements, as we have seen, as and when they wish, which is really the weakest link here, because political parties can do as they wish. For example, at this point, most of them seem to have at least one thing that they agree upon, that they want to take the ANC out of power. Yeah. Right, that is the rallying power behind coalitions. But what happens when the ANC is out of power? The coalition can collapse, right? It may be that another interest emerges. Mm. So how do you manage that without a legislative framework? We are heading towards 2024 with an increased political volatility, volatile environment, because we don't have that legislative framework.
So political and ad hoc, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
Maybe one thing, I'm listening to Dr. Vilakazi here, is that there should be recommendations. For instance, in a coalition, that the largest party, if it's by far the largest party, that party gets to choose the mayor. That if you need to give the position of speaker to another party in order for the coalition to come to fruition, it should rather go to a larger coalition partner than a party with one single seat. I think if we had a best practice recommendations, if coalition formations could be more predictable, i.e. that it's that there'd be hard to be beholden to one party which might switch sides because they're not getting a position which way out strips their importance mm-hmm. in the respective coalition, I think that might help political parties better and help the residents right. of those councils better where they live. So it's more predictable how the coalition might look and work.
Wayne, I'm going to fire a set of questions at you. So first and foremost, this notion of the kingmaker, smaller parties being kingmakers. In the vote to oust Mpho Palasi, we're told that IFP abstained, Action SA councillors weren't in the council, and in other votes across the country, the role of the EFF, as you described it, which then kind of got others to coalesce, like the PA, to come into the fore. So what is the power that they wield when they call you a kingmaker?
So the kingmaker is the tipping point. So yes, the ANC, the EFF decided to back the ANC this time rather than the DA. They backed the DA's candidate for mayor in November. But what was the tipping point? The tipping point were the 8 seats of the Patriotic Alliance. Once the Patriotic Alliance left the Palazzi coalition, its days were numbered. So we call the Patriotic Alliance the kingmaker. Now, the kingmaker has tremendous amount of power, as the title says, king or queen. However, often kingmakers can feel the wrath of voters. In Britain, when the Conservatives, when David Cameron becomes prime minister, they're able to do this with a party called the Liberal Democrats. The Liberal Democrats had to do it. There's no other choice. I mean, it was clear that Labour was unpopular. They went into bed with the Conservatives and they betrayed one of their major campaign promises, and their voters ditched them at the next election. So yes, it's a powerful term, the kingmaker. The kingmaker in Nelson Mandela Bay, by the way, was this party of 3 seats called the Northern Alliance. But kingmakers have a lot of risk on their shoulders, and vote if they don't execute it correctly, voters might punish them the next time round.
Okay, so the kingmakers then in the South African context, here in Gauteng, it's been the Patriotic Alliance. In other regions, it's been the EFF, and in some instances, it's been the Action SA.
Or small local parties. So right now in Tshwane, I would say the real kingmaker is actually the African Christian. We can debate the merits of this, but the African Christian Democratic Party give the DA, Action SA, Freedom Front some buffer. If that coalition had to lose Reverend Meshwe, that would be a chance for the ANC to flip the metro.
Okay.
So it differs per council.
Let's talk about the role of the DA. because this is where it gets really tricky. They've got that those big numbers in Nelson Mandela Bay, but they still need to consult because they don't have an outright majority. A similar sort of thing happened here, but then we started to hear of ructions. We started to hear that the DA is a bit of a bully. The DA, when the speaker was ousted in Vasco da Gama, the coalition came together and they had a solution, a consensus solution. The DA vetoed it. That's how the thing fell apart. Then, with regards to Mayor Mpopalatsi, we're told the DA were making decisions at federal council, in other words, at DA headquarters, and then just wanted her to implement what she was being told. So they were basically saying to her, don't listen to members of the coalition. You listen to what we tell you as your political superiors. And that became another point of contention. So many people are saying what's happened in Joburg is everything that we've spoken about, numbers, kingmakers, but actually it's the recalcitrance and arrogance of the DA. How do you respond to that?
So again, I think I always like to take a step back. And I think the first thing for the Democratic Alliance is that Dr. Mpopalatsi had the potential to get back lost DA voters and possibly had the skill and the savvy to gain new voters for the DA. That this is someone who, if she was successful as the mayor of Johannesburg, could possibly be a future or next leader of the DA. So that, the fact that she's no longer in that position, is in my opinion a disaster and a major setback for the DA. So that's the first thing I want to say, that they've lost a golden opportunity. The Democratic Alliance needed Mpopalatsi to succeed, and she's out of the position within 11 months. The second thing I want to say is, I think that so what the DA was saying is, we are not willing to betray from a contract. That's the line they keep on rehashing. We signed this agreement 11 months ago, and we are not going to walk away with it, because then there are going to be unfair demands in Ekurhuleni, in Mogale City on the West Rand, and across the length and breadth of this country, where we're the major party in a coalition where we've unseated the ANC. So I think that was the risk. But at the end of the day, wasn't keeping Mpopalatsi in power more important than sacrificing some of the hardbound ideas in the coalition agreement and contract they had? Wasn't it worth deviating, moving on from those hardline positions, relatively hardline positions? Then the quick point about arrogance, because you're already firing the questions here. I understand why they're coming across as arrogant, but at the end of the day, they are the largest party in the coalition. But at the end of the day, they don't have enough seats to govern without Action SA, without the IFP, and without all those other parties. At the end of the day, this isn't a good result for the DA. They needed Mpopalatsi as mayor in Johannesburg, and they didn't need her on the opposition benches. Could they have done more to work better with their coalition partners, or were they doomed from day one? Was Patriotic Alliance always going to look for a better deal, for a better opportunity to establish themselves and their brand?
Dr. Vilakazi, your view, is this DA shooting itself in the foot, the unraveling?
Yeah, I think for me, it's another incident of the Democratic Alliance and I would say a black leader, for lack of a better word, playing itself. It's a loss of Mpopalatsi, and I think a loss of many other leaders that we've seen in here, KwaZulu-Natal, Mbali Ntuli, and others who've just left recently, including Herman Mashaba. I agree totally with Wayne. I think that it was not a strategic thing to do. Members of the Democratic Alliance who have left the organization have alluded to this practice that Wayne is talking about, that the DA has a tendency of not enabling leaders to be independent, to be autonomous, constantly being led from a centralized place. And I think that is what is responsible majorly for what we are seeing in Johannesburg. But Mpopalatsi really didn't have much leeway to be able to make decisions on her own, which is highly problematic in a position of a mayor. You should be able to wield that kind of influence, that kind of power, which I think was thwarted mainly because most of the decisions were happening at central level within the Democratic Alliance. Yeah, that's sad. But that is the reality of our politics. And I mean, also, secondly, we know the relationship of the ANC and the DA in Johannesburg is a sour one. I mean, they've been in this whole thing with Panyaza Lesufi, you know, wanting to get Panyaza off and so on. So it's not a really romantic relationship. And I think the ANC
Oh, Dr. Vilakazi, I think your line just dropped there. I hope you're not load shed, but we get... Oh, yes, there you are.
Yeah, did you hear me?
Yes, go ahead with the last point. So you're saying the relationship with the ANC has always been sour, but what happens next?
Yeah, I was saying the relationship between the DA and the ANC has always been sour in Johannesburg with Tanya Zalisufi, at the level of education and issues there. So they would have done anything and everything to make sure that the DA is out of power in the metro, which is something that they've done. But I think the DA could have avoided it in the manner that they've related with the former mayor.
Now that you mentioned the ANC, Wayne, let me bring you in here. So people say, ANC, you must accept what's happening here. You've lost a lot of clout, you've lost a lot of credibility, otherwise you would have won an outright majority. You haven't. And you must accept that there are going to be instances where you are the official opposition. And you must be comfortable with that. And you can't keep maneuvering politically to try to come back onto the scene. And that's also how the Sillo Dada Morero election is being seen.
So Dada Morero is the new mayor. This is great for the ANC because we're not just in a term of local government. We're on the road to the 2024 elections. And this election is vital for the ANC because they are now in control of the most important city metro in the country, the metro, the largest budget, etc. This is a major victory. And Morero said that the ANC did reflection last time. So this is, he said this in his when he was elected. But let's see whether he's going to stick to his promises and whether he can turn the Johannesburg around and in turn turn the fortunes of the ANC around in Gauteng. Because let's remind the listeners, yes, the DA lost a lot of ground in 2021, but so did the ANC. It was a fascinating election. The ANC only got 36-37% of the vote in Gauteng. That means, and almost coming full circle, we started speaking about coalitions, we're still speaking about coalitions, but when we start speaking about 2024 in Gauteng particularly, coalitions are 100% on the cards.
Dr. Vilakazi, your view, will the ANC relish unstable coalitions because that's when they can maneuver to make a return back as a governing party in a coalition when in fact voters decided the other way around?
I think they won't give up. They really won't give up. The ANC will keep pushing. They want power, which is why they're not even doing any work to prepare for coalition governance. They will find any weak link and push their way. And I think we are likely to see a thing like that also in 2024. They are going to mobilize various municipalities where there's gaps. They will definitely hit in. And I think it's problematic, that kind of politics, because the ANC should actually at the level of ensuring that our democracy matures, should be able to play opposition comfortably also, and take it well. But I don't think that they will sit down and not challenge, which is highly problematic at the level of service delivery.
Let me read you a small quote. There are many comments that are coming through online, but it's kind of supporting your view or not. But Joe Berger says, this entire thing is about erring from Joburg tenders. Nothing to do with the citizens. This is all about who wants to gain access to the resources of the richest municipality in the country, the city of Johannesburg. And I think here's the important issue, Dr. Vilakazi. Whilst the politicians are making their deals, citizens are without water, citizens are without electricity, potholes, traffic lights constantly going down. When there are major outages from Eskom, reservoirs have their pumps shut down. Public transportation in disarray. And people are simply saying, can we get the services we were promised? And at best, can we get the services we pay for? Whether you are DA or ANC or Patriotic Alliance, a tender or no tender, can citizens be put front and center? Because that is not the feeling that citizens have. Your views.
The party political system has failed citizens in the country. Lerato, I fully agree. I think that if anything at all, coalition's government have got to prioritize service delivery. And if they cannot, 2024 has got to be a place where citizens of South Africa rise and lead, even if it means we are going towards democratic confederalism, which is decentralization of power to local places where municipalities run districts on their own. that route. But that also requires that amendment, you know, of the Electoral Act by Parliament. And we are told, for those who sit in Parliament, that that process is being stifled by members of political parties. But I think that that's the direction we should take. Service delivery and nothing else.
Your views, Wayne. People are tired. They are tired of the politicians. It's not even they are tired of the ruling party. They're just tired of politicians talking a lot of hot air. We're just sitting here helpless.
Correct. And we saw the low turnout in the last local government election, the worst ever participation rate in an election in South Africa. By the way, in the last national elections, we also saw the lowest turnout. The late Ivor Sarakinsky, who used to be often on Power FM, always said, just before he passed away, that this concerned him greatly, that more and more South Africans are saying, we are tired of the politicians' promises, we are tired of seeing no discernible change in the environments where we live, and we are not going to participate, we're not going to go vote. That's devastating. We do not want to be in an environment where citizens give up on voting, and therefore coalitions need to mature and coalitions need to show that they can come together despite the differences and work for the betterment of residents.
Like Elman says, I wish we could have ward councillor coalitions, because who holds them accountable? Failure to represent the community at its very grassroots, he says. Freddie says, it's all good and well what's being said, but why should it matter what the numbers are if service delivery is at the center? What happened to the meritocracy that was promised when there's coalition governance? Is that everybody's going to hold everybody else accountable? So service delivery is one thing, accountability is another thing, and coalitions don't seem to be holding people accountable.
Just very quickly on that. So we saw the ANC and the DA having to eat some humble pie after the last local government elections. But what did that mean? It meant more unstable coalitions. That's the paradox. So if voters are going to reject the dominant parties or turn their back on those dominant parties within the urban areas of South Africa, it just means we're going to have more in coalitions, and we better work, make sure that these parties realize how to do better with coalitions. Vital.
Let me ask a question that was asked to me in the open line last week by Mama Aletta. I loved it. And she's like, okay, nobody won a majority. I respect that. But out of these parties, these nine parties in Joburg, one or two of them got the majority of the votes, even if it didn't get a mandate. So one of them got 30-something percent, 40%, whatever. Shouldn't that be the natural leader of the coalition? Shouldn't that person, that party that wins the groundswell, lead? Because what's happening here is people who didn't win, didn't stand a chance of winning, keep coming back via the back door, and it feels unfair to citizens.
I'm sure Dr. Vilakazi can also speak about minority coalitions, but it's just going to be unstable because you need to pass bills and in order to and pass budgets, etc. You need 50% plus one. And if you, the party with only 30%, you're not going to get much done. International experience will tell you that minority coalitions don't have a long shelf life. And that's a challenge. So just to play devil's advocate, yes, most people did vote for the ANC in Johannesburg. They were the biggest party, followed by the DA. But as we alluded to earlier, more and more residents were unhappy with them and were happy for them to be confined to the opposition benches. That dynamic's now changed, but you need to do your utmost to get 50% plus one.
So people must come and vote in their numbers.
Yes.
Okay.
And, exactly.
And Dr. Vilakazi, you'll have the final say as we close off the conversation. So what we're seeing at local levels, is it likely to be something we see at a national level come 2024? And if it is, what does that mean for South Africa?
I suspect very much so, Lerato, what we are seeing at local level, something that we're going to see very much. I mean, there was a recent survey that was done by Anchor just to ask voters, what you are seeing in Tshwane, you know, Johannesburg, in Nelson Mandela Bay, you know, problems, is it discouraging you or changing your attitude towards voting? And voters were saying no. It doesn't change anything, you know. So chances are that the pattern of voting we saw in 2021 is what we're going to see in 2024. perhaps even worse. You know, so we're clearly going towards coalitions, whatever works. And I think it is that work that we need to do now around frameworking. The legislative component is key, like Wayne is saying. Whoever really becomes the majority cannot pass these bills on their own. You need other members of the council at local level to be able to vote for or against. And if they don't want you into power, they'll always vote against you. We've seen it in Parliament. The majority of the ANC has kept corrupt leaders in power because they've always just voted against the smaller parties. And that's unfortunately, we need to change our democratic political system.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Dr. Figile Vilagazi from the University of KwaZulu-Natal, Wayne Sussman, an elections analyst. It is about the law, the frameworks. It is about voting patterns. It is about managing sizes of parties, even if there isn't an outright majority. And then, as was said last week, it's about all of us turning up in our numbers to just give whoever it is you believe in the decisive victory so that we avoid this kind of compromise. But coalitions seem to be the order of the day at local level, and they seem to be what's going to be the order of the day at a national level. It's been this Monday edition of Power Talk.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.